comedy podcast, comedy podcast. Get your ass ready for a comedy podcast.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths.
Comedy podcast, comedy podcast. A certified motherfucking comedy podcast.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
Get yourself together. It's a certified fucking good time.
Yeah! It's Mardi Gras, baby. Happy Fat Tuesday.
It is the fattest Tuesday of them all.
Do you have your beads, Lucas?
Beads are actually outlawed in Denver.
So we have a bit of a mudbug catastrophe on our hands at the restaurant today.
Uh-oh.
We were supposed to have a crawfish boil.
Indeed.
Do you know what a crawfish boil is, Lucas?
Of course.
It's where you take a bunch of crawfish and you boil them alive.
You burl them.
With like corn and potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
In a bunch of Cajun seasoned water, I think.
It's,
if I'm not mistaken.
It's one of God's greatest gifts.
Well, our crawfish guy, today is Mardi Gras, and we are a Cajun restaurant. And our crawfish guy called us yesterday and said, "Hey, you ordered 500 pounds of crawfish. I've only got 150 pounds of crawfish to give you."
Mm.
So what do?
You go fishing.
I haven't checked the Instagram yet this morning, but I think we're going to try to reschedule the crawfish boil.
Wow. Were you all just down the list of vendors or of, purchasers?
I have no
like, why?
Fucking idea. We don't know. We're pissed. There's almost nothing we can do. Today's Mardi Gras, so it's not like anyone else has any fucking crawfish.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we're sort of fucked. We have all the corn and all the potatoes and a lot of Andouille sausage.
Okay.
But I don't know if we're even going to buy any crawfish.
Wow. Wow. So if folks come to your restaurant today, they can still receive an authentic Cajun experience, but not an authentic crawfish boil.
I don't know, bro. Cajuns are insane. Every Cajun I've ever met has been completely insane.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm afraid, because today is their Christmas, and we have we have deprived them of crawfish.
Yeah. Wow.
I think everyone's going to be drunk, everyone's going to be Cajun, and everyone's going to be upset. And I've got to go in at 4:00.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, then you just need to get drunk, Cajun, and upset before you go in.
That's actually pretty smart.
Right?
I might have to crush a beer before work today.
Yeah, they can't out-Cajun. They can't out-Cajun you.
I'll put on my beads. Oh, my hit me with your car shirt came in yesterday.
Heck
and
yeah.
My scooters don't kill people shirt. And
nice.
I sent our podcast's biggest fan a hit me with your car shirt. And he sent me a picture of him in the shirt.
Heck yeah.
We are in the real world. Your email is Lucas H. Riley.
Well, don't tell them that. Yeah, no, yeah, it is.
Yeah, okay, cool. This is our podcast's biggest fan. I just emailed it to you.
Nice.
The Gunner Army! This is number one. This is soldier number one in the Gunner Army.
Yeah.
He's on the front lines.
Wow. Wow. You are our only fan. Ben writes out this beautiful listener. You are our only fan, and this is a token of our podcast gratitude. Wait to thank me until you see the back.
And the back.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks, Xander.
Here, wait, let me get the shirt so you can see the back, Lucas.
Mm-hmm. Scooters don't kill people on the front. And on the back, it's a map of every traffic death in America, roadway dot report.
You like that shit? Nick said it's a little cluttered on the back, but I don't think I agree.
I'm on the record last week saying the same thing.
But it worked. So last night was the first day I wore the shirt. And so the front said, hit me with your car. And the guests, like 50% of our customers are like, that's a funny shirt. Or like, hey, I like your shirt, right? And then
I get to turn
around
violence.
And I get to say, I run a website. And then I turn around and I go, it's a map of every traffic death in America. And then I turn back around and I give them my card. And it's such a powerful wow. impression that I'm certain we're going to take over the world.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think that the design can be simplified. I think the text can just be simplified on the back. But it's a brilliant idea. And I mean, I definitely want a Scooters Don't Kill People
Let
shirt.
Let me know. Here, I'll order you one. Also, anything
sure.
you
I mean,
want to put on a
pay
shirt,
you for it,
that goes for you, listener. Anything you want to put on a shirt, we'll fucking put it on a shirt. I'll sell it to you. We don't fucking care. We don't have any morals at all. There is a legalized drunk driving shirt up in the web store now, available for $50 after tax and shipping. These shirts are pretty cheap. I ordered some test ones to like kind of see the quality of the material and stuff. I'd rate it as like a $20 shirt, and we're selling it for $50. Full disclosure, just so you know, it's probably like a $2 shirt, you know, if you go far enough up the supply chain. But I put the profit margin at like 100%, so you can support the podcast and the website and our comedy
Heck yeah.
podcasting efforts. I feel like
now we're really podcasting. Now that we're selling pointless
no,
shit.
No, but I like the merch because it's a really powerful way to like start conversations about this. At least for me. Like I need the merch. I personally need the merch.
Yeah. I'm in full support. I love it. And I think it's a threshold. I think we're really podcasting now that we're begging people to buy our merch. And hey, Xander reached out and asked us to send him a shirt. We did that.
Xander, let us know what people's responses are like. I offered. He indicated that he liked the shirt. And I'm like, well, you are a podcast's only fan, so...
Yeah, we have an OnlyFans, but it's just Xander. He is our only fan.
Merch is really all I got. I have no transportation content this week. The sun has been out, so I've been on my bike and I've been working a lot.
Yeah, I've been working a lot. I have been getting around the city a lot, the state really. I took transit all the way out to like the distant suburbs a couple days ago to meet my friends who were then driving to Fort Collins to go to a basketball game in which I wore the opposing team's jersey, to support my friends. And then they got absolutely obliterated by the home team. So I got like bullied by frat guys for, you know, a team I don't care about. That was a lot of fun. I love culture. Not a whole lot of transportation content. I think we're all just patiently waiting to see exactly what's going to happen with the federal government and all of the fallout. If, you know, they're able to achieve what they're looking to do in Project 2025, this is, you know, bad for non-car related transit. I just can't wait until, you know, the central transit agencies are, you know, just like matching you with a beater that you can drive for another 300 miles. I'm navigating a potential career transition to working with a company that works with public sector. And I asked them that question, like, hey, there's a lot of talk right now about entirely erasing the government. What happens if that happens? The answer that I've heard from just about everyone I've asked, even, you know, my trusted advisors and stuff, it's like, well, you know, they're still going to need to collect utility payments, right? Like, the powers that be are still going to need to collect the money for the resources that they hoard and services. There's still going to be good people trying to deliver services in their local communities. So that's a piece of hope that I've been taking away just from that weird kind of prism that I've been seeing my world through with this potential opportunity is, you know, the world is still full of people that are trying to do the right thing and trying to provide, you know, a service to their communities. And, you know, that's how I see transit. You know, if I always say, if you think public transit should be turning a profit, what do you think a public amenity should be doing? Like, what do you think that even is? And so, you know, maybe this whole thing, as it shakes out, will this moment in history will put that back in perspective for us and allow us to focus back in on just doing that a little bit more directly instead of, you know, sort of the multi-layered systems of funding that people have to go after in order to, you know, deliver their essential services.
It would be nice if we built some nice transit, but in this political climate, we're gonna be lucky if, you know, I mean, there's already been a century-long concerted effort to crush the efficacy of transit. That only a handful of systems have been able to resist. And I just, it's like in a system like Austin, where it's essentially crumbled in usefulness and ridership, right? Then, mm-hmm. you know, what's to stop them from crushing it into nothing? You know? Goodness. Anyway, here, let's use some Transit Observer. I rarely use this site anymore, but I did spend time. I updated this to the latest data maybe like 4 months ago.
the second paragraph of chapter 19 of the Mandate for Leadership from the good people over at the Heritage Foundation and Project 2025. The second paragraph begins, 240 years ago, Adam Smith recognized that connections were a bedrock of society because they stimulate specialization, innovation, and capital investment. In the following decades, America's growth was made possible by transportation. First ports and transatlantic shipping, then roads, canals, and eventually railroads, pushing westward to create the nation we call home. Access to transportation is part of what made our country great, and then the rest of the document is just an unequivocal call to gut those things. It's just incredible.
So I'm looking at Austin's cost per passenger and cost per passenger mile. And this is so sad. So like in 2023, it cost $12 per person for every bus trip, and it cost $75 per person for every trip on the Red Line. And keep in mind, they added a stop like right before the 2023 data at a fucking pro sports stadium. So this, the boost, it got maybe like a 50% ridership boost just because they added a stop at a pro sports stadium, at the football stadium. And it's still sucks. And it's still like, here, where's per passenger mile? Well, thank God this came back down to earth. It's about twice as high as the cost per passenger mile for the bus system. Usually it's lower. In a perfect world, your rail is lower. I know it is in Denver.
I'm looking at Transit Observer, and listener, that's just transit.observer. You can kind of just do a little audit on your own public transportation system. Awesome little service Ben has built. But I'm looking at capital expense by mode type. What did Cap Metro spend $170 million on for the bus service in 2023?
Improvements to what they would describe as rapid bus technology, but really they're just running articulated buses at 20-minute headways to like two new neighborhoods. They call it rapid bus.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah. We have some things like that here in Denver, but I mean, at least they are investing in more bus service.
Yes.
That's a good thing. The other question I have is,
two areas where people of color live, which is nice.
Yeah.
Like the two newest routes are to the east side of the city.
That's a good thing. Yeah. The other question I have, looking at, operating expense by mode type is it looks like everything fell to zero in 1996. What happened?
Yeah. There's like a hole in the data there. I don't know, but you know, it's just what the feds published.
Austin, Texas did not exist in 1996.
Cap Metro has had such heinous mismanagement for the last 40 years that I wouldn't put it past them to have just not fucking sent the reporting in for a year.
Yeah. Oh,
KUT picked up the no one can pay for their bus tickets story. Now that Cap Metro is replacing the ticketing system.
Hmm.
But Cap Metro picked it up and was like, what's the deal here, guys? And Cap Metro's official response was basically just like, well, we didn't lose too much money because we don't make any money from fares.
Right.
Thank God, bro. Fare recovery ratio is under the performance tab, and it varies wildly. Like, the New York City fare recovery ratio is much better.
God, in Denver, the cost per passenger by service, the microtransit is by far the most expensive service.
Yes, that's an unfunded mandate by the federal government.
Yeah, I think we discussed that four episodes ago.
Yeah. You know, I'm really trying to red pill people on that.
Yeah, I mean, I bring it up every time I see an accessoride vehicle driving around. I always bring it up with whoever I'm with.
Man, Transit Observer sucks. This website sucks.
I mean, I love this website. It's a bummer.
No, it's true.
Yet.
No, so here. So before the pandemic, New York's fare recovery ratio is a little under 50%.
Mm-hmm.
After the pandemic, it's like 30%. So it fell 20%. A whole 20% of their budget is now a shortfall. That's fucked up. That's so fucked up. And Austin couldn't collect fares at all. And because its fare recovery ratio is so low, like Austin's, I think before the pandemic, let's see. Before the pandemic, it was 10%. And after the pandemic, it was 5%.
Yeah.
And so then even that like last 5%, let's say they can't collect fares at all. It's not as significant a portion of the expenses of the system at large.
No. Yeah, I mean, same story in Denver. In 2019, we were at just at between 2 and 2.5%. Now it's down below 10. Or 20. 20 to 25 and then down below 10.
What gets me is, like, in Austin, the cost per trip of the system is like $5. And then adjusted for inflation, now it's over 16.
Whoa.
So transit, we're spending three times as much money to serve the same number of people. And the city is twice as large as it was
right.
20 years ago.
Right.
So it's like the system is crumbling.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to describe it. And they want to fucking parade around with their fucking shovels and their groundbreakings and their rapid bus technology while the rest of us fucking suffer. While you sit on that goddamn fucking bus and you stare at the other people in the face and you see the life leave their fucking bodies. You see the defeat. You see the defeat in their eyes. You see how tired they are of being fucking poor.
Yeah.
I hate them so much. Those smug motherfuckers at Cap Metro. I hate them all so much. Cucks. Every single one of them is invited on the podcast to come and we'll talk shit.
No, I mean, I think we absolutely should, you know, get into this and start to get some answers, because at the same time, I mean, looking at the broader situation in Austin, one thing that is true about Austin that is not true of a lot of cities where a lot of people want to live right now is that rent is going down. They have built a lot of housing stock, and they are building two new bus lines, as you just said, into historically disinvested neighborhoods. So, you know, I mean, they're doing what they can given the landscape, right? I mean, could be worse.
No, it could be a lot worse. Austin is like, I don't know, one of the only places in the whole world where the cost per passenger mile of operating the train is higher than the cost per passenger mile of operating the bus.
Well, we know that that train was an incredible mistake.
Like, pick any city and then spot check that metric. And it's all, the point of the train is to make it cheaper to run passenger miles. It's the whole point. We've defeated the purpose of the train. Especially fucked up place.
Just sheer operating expense by mode type?
Well, I'm looking at cost per passenger mile under performance all modes.
Okay.
And then it'll stratify it by mode type. Okay, no, in Detroit, it's more fucked up than us. I should have known.
Yeah, Atlanta looks a little bit more standard to what you are describing.
Atlanta looks normal. Chicago and New York, L.A. should all hold true. Because the L.A. metro is useful. I mean, people are scared of it, but it's got some good. There's some good things going on.
Well, yeah, if you do the like population around a point, if you look at some of the population densities around stops, it's pretty staggering. It's a useful service for sure.
L.A., before the pandemic, had cheaper rail miles than bus miles. But after the pandemic, they're around the same. It's because there's just more fixed operating costs to running the train. So if you bring down the number of miles you run with the train, it's just more expensive per mile.
Right.
Whereas it's a little easier to just roll a bus out. You don't need two engineers or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think every city bus should have at least three employees. There should be the operator, there should be the hype man, and there should be someone who is paid to tell you your fortune.
A lot of people would say there should be a cop. Like, I think in the transit sphere, that people talk all the time about how, like, safety is a critical component of making sure ridership stays up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something there.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
It's like a bastard. I don't know. It's like, I think people will tolerate a little bit of bus sketchiness, like, if it runs on time.
Well, I mean, my response to how do you make the bus safer is you get everyone to ride it. Because when the bus is...
Good guy with a gun.
Yeah, when the bus is full of people, and it's not even good guy with a gun, it's like six good guys, and the social pressure of that, and the... physical pressure of it as well, but you know, we're never going to be able to stop people being bad to each other, especially when we stack ourselves into cities, which we have to do. But if we can, as a community, you know each other, take care of each other, and if everybody's on the bus, it's going to be safer. We don't need a punitive non-community member to make our community safer.
That's a hot take. I like that take.
And, you know, I mean, I so...
What if we gave the bus driver a gun?
Two. Give him two.
Dooley's.
Uh-huh. No, I mean, I respect, you know, our public servants.
Like, I've told you my theory that all bus drivers should be cops and all cops should be bus drivers. Because a good bus driver is strict, right? Mm-hmm. Like, really strict.
Yeah.
And a good cop is, like, will let anything roll off their shoulders, right? You got to have a high tolerance for stress.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all the people who have been driving the bus would do really well in a law enforcement role. And all the people who are, like, really pissed off and, like, authoritarians would do really well as a bus driver.
I love it. I love it.
We can call it the old switcheroo.
The old switcheroo, and we'll replace every bus with a cop car and every cop car with a bus.
Replace every gun with a bus. Free love, brother.
We've solved it.
Oh, America, baby. No, I think my favorite America fact was when I was trying to tell somebody, like, hey, the leading cause of death in children and adolescents is cars. And then they corrected me and they said, no, it was for a long time, but now it's guns.
Yep.
Did that happen between me and you on this podcast?
I believe
a different part of my life.
No, we've definitely had that discussion already. What about Albuquerque? I want to audit what you just, the mode share, cost by mode share for Albuquerque, because they've recently invested a lot in the Roadrunner, whatever that rail is that takes you between Albuquerque and Santa Fe.
Someone told me it was a little Albuquerque.
Hey. Cost per passenger mile. In 2021, there was a spike where they invested in that, but it has since declined, and it looks like that was a capital expense.
Facilities. The New Orleans streetcar runs at a much lower cost per passenger mile. Or, sorry, that's cost per passenger. Yeah, same with passenger miles. Again, it's like, it's the whole point of running the train is that it's more cost effective.
The ferry is pretty expensive per passenger mile in New Orleans.
Boats are very slow.
And yeah, they don't go too many miles.
Yeah. Microtransit, man. One of my favorite to look at is Jackson, Mississippi. Because it really illustrates the issue of the unfunded mandate. In Jackson, Mississippi, let's see. I'm just going to go to the expenses tab by mode. And it's like, in 2023, Jackson, Mississippi spent $5.9 million on bus expenses and $5.1 million on microtransit expenses. And I don't know how much of that microtransit is federally mandated paratransit service and how much of it is perhaps just them being like, we want to do rideshare instead of running the bus.
Well, in
which
that
is a thing we're doing in Austin, too.
In that same year where those expenses were fairly comparable, the bus had 389,000 passenger trips and microtransit only had 60,000 passenger trips. So the every dollar, yeah.
No, you're spot on. The cost per mile it's still better for the bus, but it's a little closer, something like within a margin of 50%. But the cost per person, the cost per trip is like $15 a bus trip and $84 a paratransit trip. And it's like people with disabilities, but part like there's whole classes of disabilities that sort of prevent you from being able to drive. And so if the ADA is handicapping your bus network, is that good for people with certain disabilities? Like if the ADA is causing a financial crisis in bus systems all over the country, are we helping or hurting people with disabilities? Is the question I want to pose, and I guess something I would put forward as worth studying.
Mm-hmm. And how much money has been spent on providing door-to-door microtransit services that could have been spent resolving the issues that make it impossible for an entire segment of the population to not be able to get around using transit services. You know, it's essentially like, okay, everyone can call a car from the city, but why should they have to? Couldn't that money have been spent in trying to create just a more equitable and accessible system altogether? That's a little bit more of a philosophical question that would be harder to study. Mine is more aspirational, but I so agree that that money being spent is actually crippling systems. And so if we could stop doing that, please.
Yeah. No pun intended.
Indeed. Indeed.
I think we need some jazz. I think it's time to loosen up a little bit. Why don't we have any games? Why don't we have any segments? Bits, riffs, goofs.
We could play that that game where it like drops you on Google Street View and you have to try to guess where you are.
Oh, GeoGuessr is good. Well, we had a coworker, Sean, and Sean was also a fan of our podcast. We should get him a shirt. But Sean got fired. So it was like this new guy, and he was like, he was funny, and he was nice, and he was kind of young. And so I guess he was slacking off, and people were getting a little annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But he liked the podcast, and he would come up to me, and he would do this thing where he would go, "Would you rather be a ham or eat a clam?" he'd say, "Would you rather?" But it would be like two sort of nonsensical, like rhyme merinos, and maybe that could be like one, our segment. That could be one of our segments.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Would you rather walk around or fight a clown?
I'd rather walk around. Yeah, because I'm sort of putting this in the context of our beat, and it's like, okay, I either get on the bus where there's clearly a clown that I have to fight and I'll get to my destination in like 20 minutes, or I walk to my destination and it takes like 40 minutes, but I don't have to fight the clown. So I'm going to walk.
Okay, I have a really good one. Would you rather feel real nice or have a slice?
I'll have a slice.
Okay, do you have any for me?
Yeah, give me a second.
Would you rather suck your thumb or never come?
Would you rather... Okay, I got a three-parter. Would you rather never get takeout, never make out, or never fake out?
I don't know. I don't think we should make out. Would you rather make a wish or steal a kiss? That didn't rhyme. Fuck!
I like the OG. Would you rather eat a ham or be a clam?
I made a LinkedIn post yesterday that said, obsess about the customer. Call me when someone makes a software as a service that makes your wife come back. And then someone DM'd me, "Hey, I really like your website. I don't know if you need to talk, or your posts are concerning me." And I had to be like, "Nah, man, it's just a bit."
Wow. Yeah. Just a bit. Just a bit.
I miss her. No, I don't have any transportation content. America's crumbling. Be sure to fight wherever you can for local, state, county, federal funding for transit, safe transportation infrastructure. It's basically the only thing that matters. All other politics are fake, except worker power and bike lanes.
Pretty much.
That's all I got.
Yeah, treat your local transit operators and public servants with respect. It can be a scary time for them right now, more so than anyone else, as they, you know, a lot of times face the public and are dealing with this question of this essential service that I work in. Are they going to consider it essential? Obviously, we're seeing that at the federal level. I hope it doesn't trickle down. But that's absolutely right. I do see a little bit of hope in, you know, the changing political landscape and in the fact that a lot of people are really upset that voted for this. They're like, "Oh, wait, I didn't know this was going to happen." And that's going to keep happening if they keep doing this, because people look out for themselves first and foremost. And I think if we can align that movement and that transition around, as you said, labor, and just making our places nicer, easier to get around, yeah, bike lanes and high wages, like, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Oh, and it's Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras.
Whatever that means, bro, I'm not Cajun at all. I have no idea what you do on Mardi Gras besides beads.
Yeah.
I'm not even Catholic.
It's shocking. It's shocking that you're not Catholic, to be honest.
Bro, where are my Alex Jones quotes? I'm trying, like he's been completely scrubbed from the internet. It is fucked up. Like, I get why he wants to do InfoWars. Because they hate him. They hate him and they can't stop the truth.
When he makes money hand over fist, being
like,
okay, generally terrible.
Here we go. I want you to know. I want you to let them know that if there is any terrorism, we know who to blame. If any terrorists had come from this government and there isn't an outside threat like Bin Laden, who is a known CIA asset from the 80s, he is the boogeyman they need. He said that before 9/11. Oh my God. So I finished that piece on him, and I think they had some good insights about how he went from, like, someone who's more of like a crank screaming on a street corner to, like, someone who had the largest monetary legal settlement against him basically ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because his whole shtick is like, you know, like, the government is out to get you, the government is coming, and he sells on that fear, right? And his legal defense was, you know, maybe we didn't fact check all of this correctly, but all we were really trying to say is like, the government is going to use this as a excuse to come and take your guns. They're going to come and take your guns, right? And he was so embroiled in that narrative, right, that something as heinous as the events that took place at Sandy Hook were like, he went full in on false flag. he went in on it.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to me. It comes back to me, I mean, to our general sort of state of political discourse and the state of communication and community in our society, in that, like, statements and images no longer have to be factual. They no longer have to index anything in the way that we expect them to from official channels, quote unquote, right? I think this is the primary reason why the Democrats have been so ineffective, other than the fact that it seems like they don't freaking care. But they're ineffective because they continue to play the game as if they have to say things that relate to reality in a one-to-one way. But the right has figured this out, and Alex Jones certainly was early in this process, that images and words and statements, they just have to be evocative. And they have to, instead of standing as an index for the truth, in this case, a heinous event that tore families apart and was absolutely unspeakable, right? If we're going to look at it for what it actually is. Instead, it's a false flag for this fear that he uses to sell something else. And this is exactly the state of political discourse and why we are where we are, is because we fully embrace that. And the opposition parties and resistance movements have not embraced that game plan. And I think that we have to figure out how to do it without...
Yeah, we have to start churning out.
Yeah, without being Alex Jones, right? And without... drumming up the horror and terror and pain of families like the folks who suffered the tragedy at Sandy Hook to make our points. Like, that's evil.
Yes, that's true. I will go to hell before I sit here and watch this country and the world turned over to these savages. I'm done. I'm pissed and I'm not putting up with it anymore.
Someday I'm going to be...
Oh, my God. Oh, he's so fucked up. I can't even continue reading this quote.
Yeah, don't. Yeah. Someday, Ben, I'm going to be at a deposition for you or something, and I'm going to have to say, well, no, he really, you know, he wasn't...
You never... Well, you... To be fair, you never should have advocated for killing the Italians.
That's on me. Yeah, that's on me.
If you didn't want to, you know, have a hearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's on me. That's on me.
Goodness, bro, it's Mardi Gras. I don't want to go in there.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tough one. It's gonna be a tough one out there in Big Cajun.
Why did God have to give me his toughest battles?
God has
parasites certain... will be crushed. I can taste your weakness. Oh my God, you're weak. You're God's weak. I'm gonna start yelling that at drivers. Do you know what do you think tap water is? It's a gay bomb, baby. And I'm not saying people didn't naturally have homosexual feelings. I'm not even getting into it, quite frankly. I mean, give me a break. You think I'm like, oh, shocked by it? So I'm up here bashing it because I don't like gay people? I don't like them putting chemicals in the water to turn the freaking frogs gay. You understand that? I'm sick of being social engineered. It's not funny.
That's so good. That's so good. If we could make content like that,
that's the most iconic Alex Jones quote for me.
I'm that insane. I don't think I don't know if I can be that insane constantly.
He's not insane. He's repeating conservative talking points from books that were written 40 years ago, and he's yelling them, and he's adding funny comments like they're turning the frickin' frogs gay. Like, he's not insane. He's calculated. He wants to get rich. He's a capitalist. Like, he's not...
Are we capitalists?
I mean, by necessity, yeah, sometimes. But I'm not interested in getting rich in the same way, obviously.
I am interested in doing whatever it takes to sell as many supplements as possible.
Yeah. The second this podcast starts selling supplements, you're going to have to find a new co-host.
It'll make your dick bigger. It'll make your honkers larger, too.
Terrible. Terrible.
Excellent. Excellent. We're going to sell supplements that make you gay. No, sorry. We talked about transit too much for the first 20 minutes, so we just need to get into some raunchy content. Just a couple of white guys making edgy comedy, and then we can call it a day.
Let the record show I'm shaking my head. Coming back to Project 2025 here and their mandate for leadership document and their chapter on the Department of Transportation, it's mostly talk about cars, right? One of their first bolded things that they claim that they are going to do is reduce proposed fuel economy levels. The administration should consider returning to the minimum average fuel economy level specified for model year 2020, achieving fleet-wide average of 35 miles per gallon. It's just incredible. It's just incredible.
No, I mean, the mask is off. They wouldn't crush anything good.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It was always on purpose. Let's be real.
Yeah.
It was always on purpose. So nothing's different.
I mean, like, there are...
Just because we ignored low-income people when they spoke up doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Yeah, like, I mean...
Only a handful of cities were able to win the fights against this sort of thing.
Sure.
They tore up the Bronx, they tore up Brooklyn and Queens and every city all over America.
Yeah, and I mean, this administration is a return to some of that. Imperial and I think imperial is the best word. That imperial mandate that allows genocide and displacement and the destruction of communities, both, you know, on the large scale and the small scale. And so, you know, it's interesting, you know, I've been reading some things that have stayed with me for a long time, and while obviously this is a new chapter in American history, I think with Trump's second term starting here, it is still related to the past. It's not unprecedented. It's a return to what has constituted American power for a really long time. And to say that America is not that, and that this is new, is just not, it's disingenuous. But as it relates to investment in transportation infrastructure, do you have any idea, like, what percentage federal grants contribute to, like, say, rail projects or anything like that?
Nobody gets any operating money from the feds anymore. And if they do, it's on a very special case-by-case basis. Every single bus in America is matched dollar for dollar by the feds. Every bus, well, not like every bus, like private buses aren't. But if you're a county, a city, a transit authority, if you go to buy a bus, the government is going to match you dollar for dollar on that. So if that goes away, I can see that causing some very serious problems.
Yeah.
Because that is a significant amount of money. That is a very significant amount of money. That being said, really, we need the operating funding, not the capital funding. We need both, but we need more bus miles.
Yeah.
We need to be running the bus more.
That's not going to
necessarily always have like a shortage of buses.
Right. But we have a shortage of people who we can pay a good wage to drive them that actually want to do the job. A lot of the times that's happened here in Denver quite a bit. I mean, to respond to you from Project 2025 here, the definition of mobility continues to evolve dramatically with the rise of new multimodal concepts, traveler needs, and emerging capabilities. Then ride sharing is cited, as well as autonomous vehicles.
It's all cars.
It's all
Whenever
cars.
Whenever they say anything that's just a car, remember, it's just cars.
It's just a car.
Autonomous cars, electric cars, ride sharing cars.
Yep.
They're all just fucking big cuckmobiles.
Yep. They say, unfortunately, DOT now defines public transit only as transit provided by municipal governments. This means that when individuals change their commutes from urban buses to rideshare or electric scooter, the use of public transit decreases. A better definition of public transit would be transit provided for the public rather than transit provided by a public municipality. So
that's kind of fucked. I don't hate that as much as I hate probably everything else in that document.
I hate what's baked into it, which is that they are going to allow that sort of federal subsidy, which provides matching funds for the purchase of bus vehicles, to companies like Uber.
It's like, it's bad because Uber wants to destroy the bus system. Like, it's bad because Uber will do whatever it takes to destroy all transit in America, yes, because they stand to gain from that. Uber's customer base is often, like, low-income people. Like, who calls an Uber when they have a car? Functioning transit should have fares. If you took the Tokyo system and made it free, it wouldn't fucking work.
Right.
Like, it wouldn't, the trains wouldn't come every 2 minutes. You know, the system would just be like a million times worse because it sustains itself. It turns a profit. So they're able to just invest in it. And it's like, when transit works well, it might not be profitable, but it will generate revenue. And it's not, even from a perspective of like, this is a public good, you get more public good with like a revenue generating system. So it's like, I use the scooters. I have more Lime scooter miles in the last 5 years than I have miles on the Cap Metro bus system, right? And I've probably spent 100 times as much money on Lime scooters than I have with Cap Metro over that time. And I'm very grateful that the private transit option is available because it's just a million times fucking better and more functional and integrated into my life. So it's like, even as a dirty commie hippie, I think that there is a very vital function of like private transit. And as much as I'd like to just see the city have dockless mobility, I mean, that is kind of the solution I would want the most, which is the same service, but subsidized.
Yeah,
that would be fucking excellent.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, I agree that like privatization is not necessarily the enemy that we're discussing. Like I think the real thing in question here is like, okay, if they classify Uber and Lime bikes as public transit, they're going to be able to use that as a means to disinvest from other modes that are crucial for people getting around, because not everyone
will. The most important mode, fixed route bus service.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because I mean, I know a lot of people that won't ride a scooter around Denver, and I don't blame them. I don't blame them for feeling scared to bike around.
It's like the problem isn't dockless mobility. The problem is a failure in bicycle infrastructure.
Right. Right. And we know that those private companies, especially the ones that operate rideshare services, which is sort of a misnomer, but they're not going to use any federal funds that they get by being classified as public transit. They're not going to invest that money in righting that problem. So yeah, I mean, I agree that the private solution of dockless mobility has been great. I mean, I remember the first time we saw those in San Francisco in like 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. And it's amazing to see how it's really kind of taken over the world in a lot of ways.
Dockless is the future. Dockless is such a huge component of moving past cars. Because it's just so remarkably convenient for short trips.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing faster. Nothing.
And in the right context, when you don't have to cross, you know, like a 8-lane strode, it's fun.
Like imagine, so let's just say you're in a major downtown or a major urban area and you need to go 1.2 miles. You could walk for 30 minutes or you could scoot for 4, or you could call a cab. That would take like 20 minutes. Or if you had a car, you'd have to find a place to park. So that's like 10 minutes.
Yeah, even if you have a bike, you have to park the bike, and then you have to worry about getting it back to where you came from.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like a crackhead can't steal someone else's scooter. Like, you know, it's like your bike can disappear, especially mm-hmm. in cities.
Scooter, the scooter you rode can disappear, but another one will reappear.
I don't know. One issue is I do see them in the creek a lot. People just throw them into our bodies of water, which is sad.
I mean, it's crazy to me whenever I'm, you know, exploring some of the great wonder of this continent, you know, when people just like throw trash on the ground. It's pretty incredible. That's just part of human nature in a world that we've become divorced.
Deep down, I don't think it's like a failure in human, like, it's a systemic problem. We have a trash creating society.
Yeah. Yes.
So I don't, part of me is, I mean, I'm not sympathetic to litterers, but we create so much trash.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, please don't throw your scooter in the creek. There's a battery in there and it's very bad for the crawfish.
I don't know. I'm guilty of it. I create a lot of trash. For me, it's mostly takeout containers because I work at a restaurant.
How many scooters have you thrown in the creek this month?
I've thrown a few in the street, but not in the creek.
Okay.
Sometimes you just got to block the road, baby.
You're going to be okay, kid. Well,
I don't know. I'm riding a bike from 1974, so that's kind of chill.
There you go.
So not everything is trash.
No. No. Well, I need to get my day going here, but pleasure as always potting with you.
Can we do a sign-off for the Gooner Army? Can we do a sign-off for the Gooner Army?
You may.
Stop feeling like you don't have power. Stop feeling pathetic and weak. Break out of your television-induced trance. It starts with a growl. It starts with getting fired up, staring at yourself in the mirror, showing some teeth, and saying, I'm not gonna come. I'm gonna goon. I have dignity. I'm gonna resist. I'm gonna start recognizing the propaganda. I'm gonna break free. I'm not gonna fight it with my I'm not gonna fight it with my family. I'm gonna organize with my family, and we're gonna realize we're under attack by the social engineers. And I'm not gonna fight with my neighbors. We're gonna organize. Humanity's gonna come together. Ah! Yeah! We know we're under attack. We know it. We're breaking the conditioning. Yeah! Hurrah! We're coming for you, globalist. Coming for you. Coming for you. Sorry.
That's all right.
The Gooner Army will be free. The government cannot stop the truth. There are no rules in information warfare. And this is the only comedy podcast about traffic.
Comedy podcast. Stay safe out there. Look both ways when you cross the street. And we'll see you next week. Podcast.
About roadway deaths.
Love you. Bye.
About roadway deaths. Comedy podcast. A certified motherfucking comedy podcast. About roadway deaths. Get yourself together. It's a certified fucking good time. Yeah.